Spoilers.
Well, yeah, my secret Santa has so far to in send front. It to me, so I have.
Yeah. Have you received
well,
your stuff
still
yet?
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got time.
It's like 3 weeks. Well,
3 weeks.
So yeah.
No. Unacceptable.
Oh yeah, I should go fill that out.
Probably, you know, especially since you're the hardest one to get stuff to, you know, it's already going to be late.
No, he's actually just the easiest one not to send anything to. Well, sorry, customs has it.
That is true.
I mean, look, man, they made the astronauts go through customs, so, you know.
Where is there it is.
It's definitely fill it out right now. Andreas. Oh, that's great. So for everybody who's listening to Dresden at home, you can hear Andreas fill out his wish list. It sounds like this. Yeah, okay. So anyway, we're continuing the writer's room. We finally put a pin in Stormfront, even though we probably could have gone longer, honestly. You know, we kind of like got 2/3 through the way and we were like, well, we've sort of talked about the ending and skipped. And woo, Cody's here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had already talked a little bit about Full Moon, so we're going to try and keep this. The director wants one episode, but I'm telling her she's high. So, you know, like, you feel free to tell me if we don't need to go like 4 episodes on Full Moon. But I think two is, yeah, I'd try for 2, which is, you know, we're only a minute and a half in, so we're on a good start. But I had a note here that we had talked about opening with Harry and Marcone tied up. And then the rest of it's a flashback. And I think either way, I think this one's going to benefit from a pacing flip like that, because I was thinking, what if it started with like one of the murders and then, you know, we brought in Harry or something like that? Because I got to tell you, having him sit down with Kim Delaney is probably not the strongest opening. You know,
as long as we have the full on record scratch, you're wondering, probably wondering how I got here.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. And I think that would fit Harry, right? You know, so. It'd be a very hairy opening.
This is season 2, though, so it's like people are now invested, so you could do a slower
second
start.
Half of season or, 1.
Right, yeah. So if it's second half of season 1, I mean, you need something to kind of make it feel like a separate story, to make clear that it is a separate story, separate plot line, but I also don't want it to seem so jarring as if he's tied up and then everything's a flashback. I think that's
how's that jarring? I mean,
do it for one episode, but not for the whole story of it. If you have 4 or 5 episodes,
have you watched the first season of The Witcher?
Yeah, let's not do that.
Gets a little jarring.
Yeah,
and that's why it lasted as long as it did, clearly.
Sure, yeah, okay. So we're definitely not trying to do The Witcher anything, right? The only thing about The Witcher that we should strive for is finding a place for Henry Cavill to be in the Dresden Files.
He can be Harry Dresden, that's fine.
I'm down.
I would also appreciate him as Marcone.
Yeah. Meh. Yeah.
He would also be Kincaid.
Sure.
I still think Kinnaman is Kincaid.
You know what? I think we should just go full out and make him Murphy. Fuck it.
Hey, you know, like Murphy more. It is easier to get these shows like funded with LGBTQA+ stuff. So
we're definitely going to push the Harry and Marcone / then. We're going to be those guys. So, yeah.
Yeah,
that good. Locker room is going to be steamy. So, yeah. And I mean, they are tied up together, right? So that just, you know, sets the stage for the bondage scene later when we get to
Death Mask. Shit writes itself.
Right? That's
what you're saying is we should have one per book, right? We're just, like that'll be our random insert of sexual tension will be a random.
That will be what we contribute season. When we change the source material. Harry is now gay and it's Marcone. I mean, I don't hate that.
We still got to have some sexy hot Susan. Women in there. So, yeah.
Susan and Lucio. Come on. Do you want to get rid of Lucio? Andreas?
No. I want to get rid of Susan. We can do that. That would be fun.
I want to rewrite it so he ends up with her.
So,
okay.
So we're going to blend Marcone with Susan and Murphy, and then we'll just cast Henry Cavill.
As all of them.
Yeah, right. So, my girlfriend, boyfriend, worst enemy.
We need a Nick Cage cameo as well, because he's a big fan. He's going to want to get in and have a cameo.
No.
Let's just make him one of the senior council or something and just get it over
with. Yeah, he can be a LaFortier or somebody who gets killed.
I mean, yeah.
He doesn't have to be around the whole time. Who are we going to make him? The gatekeeper? That's a little much.
let me reframe this, because we should be groveling because we need Nick Cage's money, if nothing else. So
Nick Cage needs our money. What are you talking about? He has no money.
We would have.
Why do you think he does all these movies?
To have Nick Cage in the Dresden Files TV show somewhere, if he funds the entire thing. You know,
he can't.
He could broke. Be the medical examiner's assistant, like Jim Butcher was, right? So, we'll do that. No, am I the only one getting that reference?
You're the only one in the world who thinks Nick Cage is money. Is where I'm still stuck on that.
Yeah. He was like executive producer of The Magician's Assistant or whatever, right? So
that's where the last of his money went.
I was gonna say, why do you think he does 50 movies a year? Because he's like been bankrupt for 10 years. Because he does stupid things like, you know, buying Elvis's grave or some weird shit.
It's his money. He can buy Elvis's grave.
Not if he doesn't have any more, so he can't fund us. We kind of need it.
Yeah, Nick, why did you save for this eventuality?
How are we supposed to cast Henry Cavill in every other role if we don't have Nick Cage's money, which he doesn't have?
You know what the CGI budget will be when we got to have Cavill in every role, you know?
No, we'll just do the heroes thing. They kept bringing that one blonde chick back as like triplets or quadruplets. You know, we'll just cast them. We don't need to explain it.
I'm also confused, even though I kind of watched the show. But
I watched the show, but I don't remember this character.
Yeah, there was the one blonde girl. She was like triplets that were separated at birth or some weird crap, and they all had different superpowers and didn't know each other existed. And she always died. She always died, so they could bring her in as another role. I don't know why. Since everything past Hero Season 1 was crap, but what are you going to do?
Because it was the writer's strike.
And that was,
that's why we're in the writer's room.
Right. Because they were still on strike when we started this, but this has gone on so long, we're going to still be writing it the next strike. Yeah. Okay, so how, if we're not going to do a flashback because they suck, what are we going to do?
I think do it for an episode, for like the action-y episode with the Luguru attacking. Like, I think that's a fun idea. I just don't think do it for the whole storyline. But I'm not sure how you want to open up, considering the book actually opens with Harry having lunch with Kim Delaney.
That's what I'm saying.
I know.
It's like, we don't do that. And so since you shot down my idea, I have asked you to supply the next idea.
Well, opening we could, if we're going to do a slightly more... further along in the storyline, you could do it with him getting punched by Murphy and arrested as the opener, and then do that as the flashback, and then that way it's not as much of the book as
You see him getting sucked, and then you're probably wondering how we got here.
Right.
Yeah, and he's trying to explain himself to Murphy. It's kind of fun.
Or it's part of him feeling sorry for himself in the cell, right? So...
Yeah, and then you can hear the growling even of the loop guru in the back, and then it's like hard cut, and then, you know, three days earlier or some shit, whatever it is. If we did it, you know, that like he's in waiting for the, and he hears the commotion and all the murder outside.
Yeah.
And then it hard cuts into our awesome opener, which we haven't discussed how we're doing that either yet, but we have time.
Yeah, because no matter what, if you have a frame of a flashback, you still need to figure out the opening of he's having lunch with Kim Delaney.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to be in there because it's a clue and it's a mystery, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to have that. I'm just saying we don't start with that.
I think it depends on the tone. Like the idea of the old noir movies of someone's in a bar or someone's in a diner, or like you can kind of have that atmospheric feel to that type, like dark moment of, even if they're just talking, you can have the like heavy atmosphere or something. So it doesn't have to be just as bland as he's having lunch and kind of talking about things. It's just how you want to go with it. You actually need to know more about the skill and execution of it as a whole.
Every scene in Max will be in black and white. There you go. Problem solved.
Which those were a bunch of really cool words. Give us something to latch onto. Like, what? How would you change it, or what are we looking at?
What comes to mind is basically it opens more with Murphy looking at a murder and realizing it's too much, and you get a hint of some of the FBI politicking with Denton, and then she goes for help with someone who's an outcast, and the atmosphere of him being an outcast and really fucking broke, and also not being willing to help Kim again, it's like, I think you can tie it that way. And it's not as much of a flashback. It's just kind of like foreshadowing. Here's what the story is. And then we can continue on and do those small flashbacks of like, how did I get into this position later?
Yeah. You'd think I had two cups of coffee this morning, but my brain doesn't feel like it. So, but yeah.
It's the hat. It's squeezing you too much.
Yeah, it must be. So, look, man, the cow licked me in the night and I didn't have time to shower before the podcast. So you're welcome. So I did the responsible thing and I put a beanie on.
Well, the responsible thing is just to shave it all off.
And for those of you guys who are audio only, that's the only thing that I'm wearing. You're welcome. So
would that that were true.
And it's truly a treat. I can't believe you're missing out on this.
I was going to say, between Justin's wardrobe and Andrea sitting in the dark and me not even being on screen, so you have no idea what's going on. This is quite a steamy version of today's podcast.
Yeah, we can imagine. Lots of room for imagination. Okay, so...
I'm in black and white right now.
Like the way that it actually goes is that she gets a steak dinner out of him, or he gets a steak dinner out of her, more appropriately. She shows him the thing. The circles don't make sense because, you know, we've got the one for spirits, the one for corporal, and then both, right? You know, and he's like, This would be strong enough to like hold an archangel. Not that I'm going to tell her that, you know, type of stuff. And then Murphy picks him up from Max, I think.
Yes.
From what I was reading. So
she picks him up from Max and she picks up the discarded doodle from Kim and puts it in her pocket. That's how she recognizes it later.
Right. Which that's just bad on Harry's part. Like that's not operational security whatsoever. You know, he just let a detective grab evidence, you know, like
that is, I mean, obviously it's not a napkin. Use it.
Right.
Or he could say, like, this is kind of uncomfortable. Maybe we should get rid of it and burn it. But no matter if she sees it, that's enough for her to put it together later. And I think that if she just sees it and has memories of it, is a bit better than that. It feels more whimsical of investigation for her to have it in her pocket. I don't know. I go back and forth.
How does it play into a show, though, right? Like, how are we going to show she's remembering this from earlier? You know,
the flashback images that you're so enamored of.
Or the ones that you're avoiding, and yet you keep coming back to that. So you're giving me shit about having flashbacks, and then you're the one that said it. Like,
I'm just saying, don't do it as a, don't do it that much as a frame story. Do it in small bits, smaller bits. Don't do the whole thing.
Every other scene is a flashback. That's our compromise.
Right? Like, that's not what I was going for. I was just saying we could pull, you know, a suspenseful or action scene forward. And then we could reframe the story around that so that people have got something in the first 5 minutes and then they're trying to figure out how he got there, you know, and ride along with us as opposed to the slow burn, you know, kind of leading up, you know. And again, there was one scene in this one story so far. It's not like I'm saying, well, we should flashback for when he learned about the circle, and we should flashback for when he learned about Marcone. We should flashback to find out he's gay, and we should that's not what I was saying. Just to
clarify. Can you imagine how many flashbacks Changes is gonna have? My God.
Yeah, no, I can't. That's
no, we're gonna progress. This is how it's gonna go.
The whole thing is a flashback.
Right. It's completely, it's like Memento, but cut up even more.
I was going to go with next because we're talking about Nick Cage here. So if we're going to bring in Nick Cage, we've got to bring in a movie he was in that was told through flashbacks, kind of. So we're going to bring in next.
I don't think I've seen this one. I don't know if I want
It's actually really good.
It's really good.
I only caught like the last 15 minutes of it. So like I don't always like Nick Cage movies because he's always the same in all of them. That's my take, right? And so that's why
I resent the actually as if all Nick Cage movies aren't astounding.
Right. So, but next, it kind of worked because he's mostly just a guy, but he can see like, you know, seconds into the future. And so the climax of the movie is really fantastic. The rest of the movie is Nicolas Cage movie, but the end of the movie is really good. And so it's just like, I enjoyed it, you know, overall, but you know,
I should watch that tonight. Actually, I'm watching that tonight.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. You mean you're watching it right now and you have it on another monitor? Only
good part, but I would say, I mean, it's a Dresden Files book, right? So it's not the only good part, but it does all lead up to the climax, and then the ending is where all the action happens and everything.
That's going to be like our series. The last 15 minutes are going to be the only good part. Everything else is a flashback. What haven't you been paying attention to, Jonathan?
I think the whole movie is fine, but I don't mind Nick Cage movies, at least not the older Nick Cage movies. Then the I Do Everything Nick Cage movies is...
Excuse me, if he doesn't do full face-off for the mantles and masks conversation, then there's no point in having him.
Can he
be Veteran? Like, that's even better.
God, no. Yeah. No, Skarsgård.
Like, he's... Well, I mean, obviously, but, like, have Nick Cage in an eye patch. Like, how cool would that be? Anyway, so Nick Cage is great in the movies where you need Nick Cage in them, right? He's just not so great when you need somebody with a range of emotion.
Every movie. To,
you know. So, okay, since we're never going to get any of his money, even like $2 for coffee at this point.
And neither is he. We need to get off his money train. He has no money.
Let's see. The Alphas, right? Kind of got to bring them in. You know, we've talked about shortcutting the Full Moon Garage and everything like that. But I feel like that's kind of important, especially because that comes back later.
The Full Moon Garage does. I mean, the fuck were they called? Those werewolf bikers? They might be able to be shortcut a little bit, or just kind of more in the background than for like in the forefront. But the Alphas are important. The Full Moon Garage needs to be there because it shows up in Blood Rites. Or was it Proven Guilty? It was Proven Guilty. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
During that book's bondage scene, so that's good.
Right. One every book, if we're brave enough. So
if we're brave enough, it'll be one an episode.
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to be hard to have some form of somebody being tied up per every book.
Do we do the truck scene?
Which truck scene?
The one where he like just gets out like barefoot in his socks and like blows the tires off the truck and then gets his ass kicked.
That's when they're being chased, right?
Yeah, like the highway and everything.
Yeah.
So
that can be our middle of the story action set piece.
Well, sure. I'm just saying if we're doing that, we got to set up the gang at least a little bit.
Well, I mean, this is going to be the book where it's probably going to have the most red herrings in it, right? Because everybody's assumed, like, which werewolf is the one that's the bad one? It's like, well, it's the actual typical bad werewolf, but not really.
Right. And the fact that you don't find out it was really the FBI until the end, you know,
spoilers,
we'll have the coverage of, you know, like there are three kinds of werewolves, you know, leading up to it. And so you're like, cool, we got those werewolves and we got these werewolves. And where's the other guys, you know?
Yeah.
Four. But yes, four? I get your point. Well, yeah, the Full Moon because are not the same as the Alphas, who are not the same as the Wolf Belts, who are not the same as the Loop Guru.
Which is not the same as Tara West.
Right, exactly. That's where I was. So
yeah.
So wait, what was the first one? Because the berserkers were called
the biker gang. Okay. There was like one was the wolf spirit where you're channeling the spirit. One was the belt.
Okay.
Sure. One was the actual shapeshifting. One was the actual demon spirit, which is the, you know, Loop Guru, spirit of rage, whatever. Mm-hmm. I know Bob goes into more detail about it. I just don't.
Right.
But yeah, there were four different ones that show up in this book, and then Tara West, who seems to be a wolf that learned how to become human in like reverse shapeshifting, if you want to call it.
So is she like a werehuman or something?
I'm sure she has worn humans before, so yeah, probably.
But were means man.
You mean
so man. She's still a werewolf.
A wolf were.
There you go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. Whatever she's doing is very progressive, so we're going to be fine with that community.
And female empowerment. So the director has a very important question.
She will be a very strong naked female for half the show.
Yes.
All right, so Ichi's full on. Tara is dancing in the street naked. Nipples exposed and everything.
I mean, you're not.
Well, Justin seemed to be a bit hesitant about it. I was like, maybe we could put her
in. No, he's hesitant about having Nicolas Cage full on nipples out dancing in the street naked. That's a different
I would just like to clarify the part where I got derailed and I'm hinting at, because I wanted you to say it instead of me so I get canceled again, is that you asked me if her nipples were erect or not. And I believe that I am not the person to make that call. So I will leave that up to the executive producer and to the actress. And I trust in the artistic process to make the right call.
You know what? As a biology major for the moment, it's outside and she's naked. They're erect.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, but, you know, okay. My filter slammed in place for a moment, so I'm just going to let this energy bleed off somewhere else. But
what we will do is we will give her two beanies, one for each beanbag, to hide the erect cowlick of her nipples.
Jesus Christ.
Did you just
No, he's not coming in until much later. Probably not till the big apocalypse trilogy. We can't use him this soon. I'm sorry.
Do you think he'd show up in heel turn at least? You know, like I think it'd be cool to have Thor and Jesus like wrestling, but like does their hair get tangled or anyway.
I feel like Jesus is probably more of the manager promoter side than the wrestling side.
Jesus is?
Yeah.
Maybe he's in charge of catering.
I mean, he's probably efficient at it. Yeah, right. Between the fish, the bread, and the water into wine, you're pretty much set for the craft services if he's around.
Right. Thank you. All right. Okay. So, five kinds of werewolves that we're going to fit into like four episodes,
We need to have that lesson with Bob of like, okay, so what's a werewolf? And he says, which kind? And then he goes on about the Hexenwolf and the Lugaroo and everything like that. We need the study session with Bob. And of course, he's going to talk about nipples. Or
as we would call it,
clearly,
in the industry, the exposition session. You know, I'm a writer.
I mean, he's literally a talking head. You're not going to get away from that. So, you know.
Exposition in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's all about execution. Just like erect nipples are not a bad thing in and of themselves. It's all about execution.
Are they ever a bad thing?
It depends on who you ask. There are some prudes out there.
Yeah, the fact that Harry takes notice of all of the erect nipples might be what people dislike.
I understand the realism. The problem potentially of the quote-unquote male gaze, but at the same time, if they're just there, you're going to notice them no matter what your gender is. So,
okay, so without getting like Freudian here, you know, so let's try and move on to the next thing. You guys thought we were going to fit this into a single episode. You guys spent the last 10 minutes talking about Tara West nipples. Like,
First of all, don't lump me in with the director who seems to think any kind of structure is ever going to come
like
into these episodes.
I said you guys, so I lumped her in with you, even though she's the worst offender. So, which is fine, by the way, because that takes the heat off of me, hopefully. But yeah. Okay, blah, blah, blah. I'm just trying to think of like other plots that we might need to account for, but I think it's all of the werewolf stuff, and then we've of course got McFinn going after Marcone is kind of one of the big ones because he's the big gun pointed at Marcone.
Big stuff is Marcone, McFinn, and the murders in general. A lot of this stuff's going to be red herrings with the FBI weaving it in to the Lobos and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we have the Lobos killings going after Marcone's people and Denton being a political dick with the Hexenwolves and all that. And they need to learn what all of the werewolves types are to start investigating them, run into the alphas. And also Marcone needs to try to get Harry to sign a contract with him to be on his side, because Marcone's scared shitless of a Lugaroo because he's smart and he wants Harry the wizard to protect him. With a lot of money.
A little like less smart, but...
Is this where we get hinted at Guard?
She doesn't show up until...
Death Masks.
Death Masks.
Gotcha.
Just remember, it has something to do with his estate. Is it Bob that gets sapped? But that's not this one yet.
But if you want to hint at her, I mean, I suppose at the end we could have him like with a Monarch Securities business card calling a number, you know, at the end of the season.
This is probably where he realized or did that, got that out.
Yeah. I have no doubt.
Because Marcone is intelligent and uses his resources and looks for more resources.
You say he's intelligent, but he picked up a denarian.
Well, that was on purpose. There's no chance he did that accidentally. But
sure, I'm just saying that's not an intelligent.
If I was going to take a shot at his intelligence, it was the whole, you know, he was hanging upside down by a rope, you know. But okay, the denarian.
Yeah, but Marcone is again capable enough to get out of the hanging upside down by a rope, and Harry has to struggle.
I feel like somebody's a fan of Marcone a little bit for that answer, but okay. So
just like what he like has a knife in his boot or something, and then he like throws it upside down while he's swinging, and then he cuts the rope, and then he falls. He's free. It's like because he had superpowers because he was in the Marines or something.
Well, yeah.
No, he just watched.
Every Marine is a superhero. Come on, now.
He watched Boondock Saints, so he knew how to do.
Yeah. Hoorah!
You and your fucking rope. So
what am I, stupid fucking rope?
So anyway, is that not a movie you've seen?
I've seen it. I don't remember it very well.
Okay, well, there's a part where they're dead from a rope and they kill everyone.
I was going to bring up, since we're in a fantasy world, do we bring in like Willem Dafoe as like, you know, as the FBI?
As the Green Goblin?
Well, I mean that too, but...
I thought that's what you were going to say.
As Denton...
Tell me that Denton and the Green Goblin aren't like an 80% overlapping Venn diagram. Go ahead.
Willem Dafoe, as much as I love him, is a bit too old for Denton, I think.
No way. Yeah.
Well, yes, but also I could see the argument for someone who's been in the field work that long, being that jaded, taking this deal.
Yes.
And the wolf pelt makes him feel young and powerful. Like, of course.
Okay. I mean, I get all of that. There's just also the various action movements. I don't know if he can keep up with.
That's what you got stuntmen for.
I mean, he did well enough in No Way Home that I think he can still move.
Yeah,
true.
Like, oh, right. Sorry, that was a Marvel movie. So Willem Dafoe plays a really well-known villain.
I was thinking more of John Wick.
Goblin, like... you know, like.
Well, he didn't really. He was a sniper in that. He didn't have to do so much.
And John Wick?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Wait, he got like
enough of these. So
No, he had like full on bodily fights with people and he was just moving a bit slow. I don't want him to be hurt.
So
I don't
just for what popped into my mind, the director thinks she could take Willem Dafoe. So I'm just saying, this is a cage fight. We're gonna have to get him on the show and we're just
going to have
throw down. Yeah, right. Which is another Marvel reference.
I was going to say, we can't get Macho Man in this because he did.
Right. But, you know, we'll give the director a knife. We'll give Willem Dafoe a knife or markers. We don't actually have to have people die in this. And then I want her to say the line. I got you for 3 minutes.
3 minutes of playtime.
Yeah, just tell him that's really cute and ask him if his wife made it for him.
So. I am slightly intrigued by the idea of a knife fight to the death between the director and Willem Dafoe, however.
I mean, me too, obviously.
What's wrong with you people?
Well, first of all, we really want Andreas to come to America, and we think that would sell enough tickets that we could finally make that dream happen.
Costco pizza! So,
yeah. If you would like to adopt a starving podcaster for just a nickel a day...
Now, are we doing this for Andreas, or are we raising for the Nicolas Cage bankruptcy fund so that we can get him in this show?
Nicolas Cage has had his money, so, you know, like, he's good. This is for Andreas, and, you know, if you don't want to give us a nickel a day, if you can arrange literally a knife fight between the director and Willem Dafoe, then we might be able to make this happen, so. And I mean, I'm not even worried about the director. She's so confident that I anticipate she's going to live, so, you know. It's not like we're like betting on her death or anything.
She's married to a former military man. He's got to have trained her.
Right? So what you're saying is she's the one that's hanging upside down from the rope, throwing knives at people in her spare time.
Wait, were you secretly a Marine and you didn't tell us? Like,
Oh, see, she's trying to play down her skills, so when we lure Willem Dafoe in, he's going to feel overconfident. Yeah. And
apparently, we can't get her outside, so you can go to the local Indian place. So I mean,
help! I'm a little girl. Oh no! So she's going to fake twisting her ankle in the knife
fight. Wait, is that her? Or is that Willem Dafoe's ankle?
Right. It's hard to tell with him sometimes. You know,
I was going
to
say he has a very he can get into character very well.
Yeah. Okay, so. That's another train we've got to get off of now. Thank you very much. So,
I'd like to point out the director is responsible for derailing two portions of this conversation.
I didn't do shit.
No, first of all, you existed for this one, so that was your fault.
You talked to the subject, one. You were the subject, and two, you didn't put us back on track. That's on you. You're the one who puts us on track.
I mean, I am loath to agree with Andreas, but he is correct.
That's how you know how bad it is that even EG is agreeing with Andreas. So
put us back on track.
She can't. She's picturing this knife fight now. This is all that's going on through her head is stabbing Willem Dafoe.
There was something else.
How would I take the foe? She's sitting.
Yeah. Fast and hard, just like everything else.
Whoa. In your endo.
Yeah. She said that he's looking slow, so obviously you got to play to your strengths at that point. But
you got to take your time, you know?
She's going to come in on a snowboard, just like off a snowy hill, like two Gatling guns.
And then you got to say the line.
I don't know.
Some motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill.
What is happening here?
To snowboard in, then obviously, you know.
Oh, can we have that during every bondage scene for every season too? That'll just be the safe word.
No.
that's a hell of a safe word. Thought it was bananas. Jeez.
I'm so lost.
That's what the audience expects. We gotta subvert.
Can we go back to murders and werewolves?
Sure.
Whatever, if you put us back going, on track. So.
Technically, okay. We were on murder.
Denton
right.
And Hex and Wolves and all of that weird fighting that we've got to show that type of infighting between them and Murphy at the very least, because the FBI is running into right. Chicago and trying to take control. And that's a character that you have to nail right in the fact that he's got to be antagonistic to Dresden, but hiding it and trying to be friendly a little bit, because didn't he give information to Harry about the Street Wolves and that's how they set him up?
Yeah. Right. So, that was, yeah, how he got involved there. And then, but he also had to bring Ben back into the fold, right? Because she was going to she tried to attack him.
Yeah, she almost put on the belt. And when
she wanted to kill, she was going to kill Murphy right there, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so instead she pulls out her gun and fires that because that's the better option. And then they just we're going to have not do any paperwork about this because we're going to be friendly.
Well, it can start off like any kind of procedural show where you see the FBI and the local cops are getting into it. And then you just out of nowhere, Ben's taking her gun out. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Right, right. I sense there might be a little bit unhinged going on there, you know, so. Yeah, and I think Dresden's line I read was, you know, what the hell, you crazy bitch, literally. So, you know, I think that kind of covers. Right.
All right. So in what order do we do this? And where do you put, say, an episode break of do you try to end an episode when he gets tied up by the Street Wolves? Do you want to?
Some motherfuckers. Yeah. I think that's fine. Yeah. That's suspenseful, right? You want to keep people coming back.
Hey.
Yeah. I mean, If we could get the pacing lined up, you know, that could be a final scene, and then that could just lead into a transition for the next episode with him going out to the Street Wolves and, you know, checking their thing out, and then have a whole episode, you know, where he's running down these false leads, right?
So I feel one episode should probably start immediately with Chauncey, right?
You think so?
Well, I think depending on where we can do the breaks, if you start with him with he's a snarling demon comes onto the screen doing this, that, and the other thing. And then he's like, okay, are we done with the formalities now? And he puts the glasses on and I think that would be a good little opener.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What does he get from Chauncey?
Information on MacFin, the fact that it was
The Northwest Passage sent out by St. Patrick. All that stuff. Gotcha. And then that kind of stuff.
Okay, right.
And then the whole hints about his parents and all that.
That seemed like a good deal for a part of your name, by the way, when I think about how much value names actually have. And like, looking back, it's like, that was a bad deal.
It was, yeah. And I think that's part of the idea. And that's why I'm like, I mean, I'm loath to change too much from the books, right? But at the same time, Chauncey hasn't come back in like 15 books, right? And so I'm like, do we...
Death Masks?
Does he show up again?
I think he shows up twice.
Okay.
Right? Am I wrong?
I'm just like, how...
No, he's this is it. He's mentioned again, but he doesn't appear on screen except in this one.
So I'm just like, that's time and money and stuff for like basically zero payoff, you know.
But there's a benefit to showing Harry doing magic and the powerful nature that it can be, because he's still not good at it. And in this book, he loses his ability to do magic because he pushes too far for a little bit. And so showing what he can do and then showing its loss is still important, even if it's like you're putting CGI budget on a demon that we see once.
The other option, honestly, would be is you put the werewolf information in here that he gets that kind of stuff from Chauncey instead of Bob, if you want to do it that way.
But then I don't want to lose Bob.
Well, he's got the potion stuff. He's still going to be doing that. So it's not like we're losing Bob, but if you want to make it a more substantive scene.
We can combine the potions in the werewolf, you know, thing. Like, he's getting the werewolf information at the same time he's doing potions. I feel like that's fine.
It is, but if you wanted to add more to Chauncey, then it's either that or we have to come up with some other info dump.
Chauncey doesn't have to be a ton of CGI, I don't imagine.
Well, he doesn't have to be like a particularly long scene.
Well, yeah, but like, what's the payoff? And is it taking
stuff about his parents?
Other things? Can we double up on something else? Like, do we have Ulsharavas show up early so we get Ulsharavas twice? You know, and we could still demonstrate Harry doing magic without having just this demon hanging out for no freaking reason. Because Ulsharavas, you know,
I don't know, that interaction in Death Mask, it was much more like, I don't trust you because I don't work with the bad wizards, and so he had to prove himself to her for a moment, and it's just a completely different kind of conversation. And so I guess in some way I don't want to change those characters. And Chauncey,
I'm not saying we have to. We changed the scene, so. Mm.
Chauncey says Maggie Dresden's youngest, which is the only hint he has until Death Masks that there's something else out there with his family.
If only he had paid any attention to that. So
yeah, like asked a fucking question even when his it says, oh yeah, and about your mother, and then he just wakes up.
It was like a star born. It wasn't time.
Right.
I don't know. I lean on the side, if we keep Chauncey, we just try to keep it not too high budget, because we still need to save the budget for the Lugaru attack.
Right. They've got some old Jim Henson puppets lying around we can use for the demons, like in the first book and this
Farscape.
One. Since
you can always supernatural it, you know, it's just like it's human shaped black eyes or some such.
I'd at least want him to do him up like a tiefling or something, so he's like red and shit. But I'm just saying, we don't have to have like CGI wings or.
All right, here's the solution. We have Peter Dinklage, because he's only half the budget, and then we put him in the circle.
I don't know where we want you yet, Peter, but I'm so sorry that he said those words. So, you know, because of course you're like one of the people watching right now. But anyway.
Yeah, him, Nick Cage.
Right. Because
Henry Cavill.
Everybody.
We got them all watching right now. This.
Yeah, exactly. So
our rabid fan base has tagged them all on Twitter.
And Cody. So, you know, all of the important people.
All the great.
Jonathan's here. Steven. We're covered, man. So, okay, so I'm just saying, like, we don't need to
get... You too can watch us live on YouTube every Saturday.
Right. Yeah. I'm just curious if we actually, like, take the time for it, or if there's a way we can convey it otherwise. And it's mostly just because he doesn't pay off at all, so far as we've seen. Like, maybe he does buy the BAT and everything, and that'll be a big mistake. But that's why I was floating the idea.
You know? Yeah, it's we don't know, but it always seemed like when Nicodemus says something about Maggie Dresden's youngest, that maybe he had gotten information from Chauncey in some way, considering they're on the same side. Hmm.
Maybe it's that. Maybe he's a library. I don't know. So
that's also true.
That's actually where he lives, is in that library.
You just like, you know, seeing hurt characters. So I'm just showing you the other side of that. So showing you some of the pain. All right.
You're turning the director into a hurt character.
Okay. So there's got to be some, there's a bunch of the investigative. He's still doing the noir gumshoe thing. And we do all this investigation, but end on getting hit over the head with the street wolves and then needing to get out. But doesn't he meet the alphas first? And so he's got that too. Got to meet Billy in Georgia.
He tracks them down the warehouse. When's the next time he runs into them after that?
When I think Tara West has the alphas with him to save him from the street wolves at Fullman Garage.
Yeah. That is correct.
And then they all go get Burger King, of course. So it just
as you do.
You need to have the
if you don't get a Whopper a day, it won't keep the doctor away.
Well, it'll bring a different kind of doctor in.
But Whopper, I hardly know her.
Fucking Christ.
Speaking of pain, I think your Justin, soul left your body for a second.
Justin even had the dad laugh there. Not just a dad joke, but the straight up dad laugh.
He
was very satisfied.
A silent prayer. There was just the full on, like, that wasn't even an eye roll. That was like,
pleading. No, this episode is what she's going to tap into for the rage she needs to take down Willem Dafoe in that cage.
Right. Fight. Just getting you ready for the fight. So.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Does that laugh and the humor, does that come with the kids or?
It comes with trying to temper your naturally loud laugh, because otherwise my other laugh is like overly loud and fake. And that's probably really bad for, you know, the podcast. That's why I usually try to throw my head up when I'm laughing. So I'm not laughing into the microphone, you know, so.
Podcaster.
And you got to remember, everyone has the foundation of dad joke potential inside them by having fathers, in theory. So it gets activated more when you have.
What about
kids?
All those people who like grow up without a father figure?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like magic. It's an ability everybody has, but not everybody's, you know, accesses it. But sometimes you have other avenues, like you have little cousins you have nieces and nephews, and these are sideways that you can get into the dad jokes without the responsibility of then being a father. The ability to do dad humor and then pass the child back off to their parent and leave is even more magical.
Your life plan, EG, makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
This is why I am the way I am.
My brother is the same for sure for that. Like, we have, like, you guys all like cringe and roll your eyes at my references and whatever. He's over there making the exact same ones that I do. So when he and I hang out, you know, it's finally somebody understands me.
But have you had the moment when your kids say something that your uncle said, what? He said that. I'm going to go kill him.
Not yet, you know. So yeah, but okay. I'm sure it's
give
coming.
It time.
Yeah.
It's usually around the 11 to 14 stage where you get to really sink that stuff in. It's a little funnier when they're 7 and 8 because they've still got those like cherubic faces and they're saying fuck to you and you're not sure where it came from. But
4-year-old saying it way better. Like if you want to practice like your poker face, just go hang out around a 4-year-old who has saltier parents, because like we don't shield our language, but yeah, every now and again, you know, he'll just walk up to us, and it's been a little bit now that I think about it. He'll be like, hey mom, hey dad, can I say fuck? It's like, no, buddy, that's a grown-up word, you know. Okay, fuck, damn it. Okay, great, thanks. Go about playing now, you know. It's like,
wait, so he asks, yes, can I say this? No, then he defies you, and you're just like, go on.
What do you do? It's, I mean, I can't beat him, like, you know, it just...
Not
just
with that attitude!
He gets straight out of his system, and then, yeah, well, and that's
only,
the only reason why
only
we
at care, home.
Right? Like, the only reason why we even care what his language is because I don't want to have to sit down in a parent conference and whatever, and be like, he just taught the class how to sing the national anthem to the tune of fuck, you know? And I'm like, well, he is a talented kid. I didn't teach him that. not specifically. But,
that's impressive. You should both be like, yeah, good.
Nice.
The solution.
But you'd be surprised that that's not the right energy to bring to one of those conferences. So
no, just wear your beanie and they will understand why your child is the way he is.
Right. Don't they have to provide education, right?
Get some of those candy cigarettes.
It's even better. Oh, even better. Give him like his own silver case with like his initials on it with those candy cigarettes in it. And he could like tap on it like they did in Community, and then they would eat it.
How old is the oldest a 4-year old? No, it's not right. That's the younger one.
He's almost 9.
Yeah.
Or just about 8. Did he just turn 8? He just turned 8.
Yes, yours. You're the one with children on this podcast at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I was reading, so I wasn't in the context of the conversation. Oh. Yesterday was his 8th birthday, so yes.
Oh, we almost have to say, like, we're, like, within 4 days of each other.
Oh, nice.
Me and your son.
Well, that sucks for him.
Happy, early birthday?
No, the 11th is when my birthday was.
Ah, shit. Well, that's going in the calendar then.
But he's also a December child. He gets to have the joy of waiting for the gifts all year and then having it in 1 month.
Yeah, right. Having
it split out.
Yeah.
So where? But
when did he start swearing?
Sorry, director, it's not happening.
Both of them were young. Like
utero. They started swearing in utero.
Pretty much. Yeah.
But Daddy said it. I could hear it through the wall.
Yeah, really. This thing gets excellent sound in here.
Yeah. You wanted to leave us back on track, Alex? That's in the...
And then you were asking a question about when the children started swearing because you're a bad, bad person.
I'm a great person.
Let's not get carried away. You're a December baby, so you're already behind the curve.
I mean, gotta at least talk about how we're gonna set up Carmichael, right? Because he has to be an asshole, but an asshole we love, and then he dies.
Right.
I was going to say, we can save money by making whoever Chauncey's like voice actor is, the actor for Carmichael, so that way, since we're killing him off in both of this one.
The thing is, it's going to be hard to set up Carmichael as an asshole. I generally never saw him as an asshole, and he just pales in comparison to Murphy in this book.
Well, Carmichael, doesn't trust Dresden. We could give all of the
Murphy hate to Carmichael, so that'd be an easy thing. Carmichael's the one that slugs him. So
then everybody will like Murphy, unlike E.G., like that, because they won't have that, but she won't have the character development that she has.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like, I'm worried if you change that. If Murphy is, if she hits him and she chips his tooth and everything like that, because he's not telling her everything.
Right.
Then do you lose the character development when he does start telling her everything in Summer Night?
In Summer Night. Yeah, no, for sure.
So. The whole fight, every fight that they have is because he's not telling her everything because he's trying to protect her. Up until...
I mean, really, you could still ratchet that up in Grave Peril, you know, quite a bit. Because the reason why he actually changes is because she winds up in a coma for half of Grave Peril. So... Not because she chipped his tooth. So.
No, like he didn't really care about the tooth. It's just like it's partly that because she wasn't as aware of things, she kind of got into trouble. And then also Susan didn't know everything. Susan got into trouble. And in Summer Night, when all of this thing's happening, he just needed someone to be able to talk things out with. He did it because he needed someone to talk to.
Right.
And he chose the right person. But that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we can kind of determine, because there's also kind of like, I mean, because he gets his redemption at the end of it too, right?
Yeah.
Like, mostly he just gives Dresden a hard time as being a non-believer, and, you know, he very much reminds me, he's always reminded me of Harvey Bullock from the Batman animated series, which it totally doesn't hurt that I rewatched that recently. You know, they're very similar characters in my mind. You know, so So there's some of that, but he mostly just gives Dresden a hard time, not believing, not buying in, you know. That's all we really need is that kind of abrasiveness, you know, show him, do some petty things. He can bring, he brings two coffees, one for Murphy and then his own.
Yeah.
And Dresden like reaches out and he's like, oh, thanks. And like, he just turns away, you know, like yeah. You can demonstrate some of this that, you know, that'll exactly. Kind of spell the fact that like, he doesn't like him and whatever.
Petty antagonism and absolutely on the disbelieving side of like, explain this, prove this, this is a bunch of bullshit. It just happens to be that Dresden is probably right. He just can't show it to someone like that. Right. But yeah, like Carmichael, he's not a bad guy. He's not an actual antagonist. He's just antagonistic to Dresden. And he's still a good guy and he saves Murphy. And then when we see him later in Ghost Story, he's absolutely on our side.
Right. Right.
Mr. Man.
Right. Yeah, like, and, I mean,
the same sentence comes to mind. There, all the
that's
time.
A that's another big one, you know, for that Cody brings up. It's like we've got to have Rudolph, you know, we've got to at least get Rudolph cast correctly right. And everything because he's going to be a big deal going forward. We've got
Jack
Gleason. I feel like we've got to do the whole Snoopy scene, you know,
right. Because Rudolph that also
pays
one.
Off.
Yes, Snoopy because mouse.
Right.
What you think? Yeah.
Yep.
The Snoopy scene is important, but because it's also Rudolph threatens Harry if anything bad is going to happen to Murphy in both he's freaking out because of Lugru attack, and in grave peril is when he actually threatens Harry because of Murphy because Murphy's in a coma. And then all of a sudden Rudolph changes, and we don't know how much of that is important to keep because we don't know why he changed all that much. So because we still don't right. Have these answers, we don't know how much to try to. Retcon or not.
Right.
But yeah, Snoopy's important. That, I think it's got to be one whole episode, I think, of like walking into the precinct and then the potion and everything goes gray and then everything suddenly doesn't go gray, seeing the Lugru, having to do the Snoopy scene, having to use the silver bullets because Murphy paid attention. The part of the exposition with Bob has got to be the inherited silver, and you probably would see the pentacle from Margaret, but then not paying attention to it until way, way later because Dresden's an idiot.
I mean, yeah, we could even just have, you know, Dresden like fingering it just while he's thinking, you know, so anybody clever paying attention
not
sees
so clever.
It.
Like, it's pretty obvious, and he mentions that he's gotten it from his mother and all sorts of things.
Smarter
like that.
Than a high wizard, you know, so that's something, but...
He is a high wizard because of his capabilities, not necessarily because of his putting together puzzle pieces. Not always.
Right. Not yet. He's learning. So, you know, you just got to sit here and ask yourself, was Merlin this dumb when he was this young? Like, you know,
don't ask that question. You'll give people the wrong tinfoil.
Right. Yeah.
It's funny when you think about how Harry explains in Skin Game, the fire, like what it takes to walk through fire for her. Like when he's like, okay, let's start by you doing multiplicate division by this, play and do this with while standing on 1 foot, and then we can walk you through a campfire. Right. It's like if it's that complex and you can do all this magic, Harry, why why don't you ask what a starborn is? Why do you
Yeah. Knowing how to do something is not the same thing as knowing how the pieces fit together in a larger picture.
He's been a detective for like 15 years.
As a full moon, he's mid-20s.
Yeah, but in, you know, at that point, they're
like 26. Yeah.
He's been doing it for a few years, and he's not doing well because he's always behind on his rent.
Well... Wizarding isn't exactly a paying job, so.
That's why Marcone wanted to pay him.
Yeah, but then he'd have to sell out.
Yeah, it's like, but it's a great move on Marcone's part. It's very clever. It's that he just wants the Wizard of Chicago on his retainer to be able to provide for him, help him do his natural thing of go after the bad guys.
No. Yeah, he... For Marcone, it was two wins. Like, that's why Marcone played it, right? He gets Harry off the street, and he gets an ally, you know? So,
It's another one of those things that Butcher always sets up of here's the smart, logical, safe, like gives you security type of decision. Mm-hmm. And the character has to turn it away for something that feels much more irrational and emotional.
What's he going to do for
money? I would say principled. I wouldn't say him turning down Marcone's thing. Like, I mean, it winds up being emotional because Harry, you know, has a personality like that, but it's a principled thing, you know? So,
well, it's the same as Aquitaine wanting to marry Izana. It's the same as Rook trying to buy the Predator. It's like all of those moments of like, here's a lot of financial security and power and just everything. All of the logical reasons why to do it. Mm-hmm. And the character says, those are all very valid and I'm not doing it for other reasons I value more. And 11 is emotional. Sometimes it's principled. Sometimes.
But also, right. I mean, Grimm was quite emotional in the moment. So,
yeah. You know. And Harry's reacting more of like, I hate you because I can't stand you. And that's why I'm not doing it. A little bit less than his narrative of it is less on the principles and more of I can't stand you versus Izana was much more principled in her emotions.
Right.
But we got to have Marcone. We got to have Hendrix, the gigantic bodyguard. And so how did everything go bad with McFind and get Kim Delaney? Because we'd already run into the street wolves, right? We'd already run into the alphas. And then what?
Sorry. Nice one.
I was surprised. What Murphy calls Dresden and says that there's been a murder. Is that how it happened?
Like 5 times in this book. Yeah. So.
And he goes there and she tried to do the circle thing on her own because who messed it up? Was it the street wolves?
Yeah, like she picks up Dresden basically Denton and them snuck in and messed up the circle. So Kim Delaney's trying to recreate it. And then she does a bad job or is otherwise interfered with and Mac McCree and kills her. So, and that's like the third murder, I think, that Murphy has Dresden come out and take a look at. So, because like Murphy picks him up from McAnally's right after the dinner and takes him to a more different murder.
Yeah, that's that's spiky hair, right?
Yeah, it's either spiky.
One of Marcone's
is also like a business partner of Marcone's, right? Which is another one of those like Marcone is probably involved in this, you know, kind of hints. So,
right. And how did Harry learn of McFind and Marcone having some form of business deal going south?
So he does prior to the Chauncey thing, he does find out about the Northwest Passage. I don't remember the specifics.
And McFind's motivation for the Northwest Passage, that is, I guess partly for his wolf girlfriend and partly he wants a big place to roam as a wolf, right? And not hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't remember what the justification was, what Marcone wanted out of it. But it doesn't seem like something that Marcone would really be against. He wouldn't say, no, you can't have a nature preserve. So it also seems like it's another thing that Denton was interfering with just to make Marcone the bad guy to McFind.
Right. Yeah, okay, so Marcone propositions Harry again. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Yeah, Marcone walked around my desk, past me, and toward the door. Hendrix followed in his wake, huge and quiet. Then in my own interests, I must accept your offer and aid in the investigation, however I might. Look up the name Harley McFind, ask about the Northwest Passage project, see where they lead you. He opened the door. Marcone tells him. Right, so,
because Marcone's fucking terrified. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it was Spike. You were right on that. Andreas, it was that one. That's why Marcone is scared, is because McFind already got one of his people. So, yeah.
But was that McFind that had gotten Spike?
That's not McFind, though.
No, because it was Denton making it seem like McFind.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. But in Marcone's head, it's MacFinn got one of his
Marcone people. Marcone knows that the circle is broken somehow. Right. Of course he knows because of course he does. And he knows that MacFinn's going to go after somebody and he's capable of just putting himself.
He might not even know the circle is broken. He just knows that a werewolf killed somebody and he knows a werewolf personally. And the werewolf killed one of his people. This is really, really making the circle pretty small. That's why the FBI thing is so perfect, is because no one would have expected that the FBI were gifted artifice, equipment to basically turn into a werewolf. That's not something Marcone would know at this point in time. He only knows that there's supernatural shit out there and MacFinn is a werewolf, probably, and he just won't out and out say it to Dresden. But so in Marcone's mind, it is MacFinn. And that's why the FBI did what they were doing to, get close to Marcone, pin it on MacFinn and try and get to Marcone and everything like that. But yep. And they would have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for that meddling wizard.
Mm-hmm. Or the Burger King crown.
Right.
So how's your script writing going, Justin?
I got some notes. So
okay.
I feel like I'm going to have to go through this one a bit more because I don't remember how all the pieces fit together and whatnot. So
I do feel like this is one of the ones before Jim really knew what he was doing of how to stitch the different plot lines together. So they do feel a lot more muddled and the transitions between them don't feel as solidified.
Could be.
It doesn't really... The first book where I think it, like the B plot and the A plot kind of flow seamlessly, is it's not book three for sure. It almost feels like two books.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's Summer Night either. Maybe
I feel
might be book five.
Pretty good about Summer Night. Yeah,
it's four or five. So thereabouts.
Yeah,
book three actually feels like two books when you think about.
Yeah, it. Right. It is, because it's like, it's like there are two A plots as part of it. There's not an A plot and a B plot so much as there's two A plots. And you're just like, wow, shit, where does all this happen? And then, that's not even talking about all the shenanigans Leah's up to. And that's not even talking about, was it Kyle and Kelly, whatever the twins were, right? Kind of important, but, not nearly so important as, Kravos and what Bianca are doing,
And that's not and mentioning Cal and Kamori or Mavra or Christos or not Christos. Ortega.
Ortega, yeah. Yeah, I mean, technically, Kravos would be the B plot, but it's such a strong, important B plot that so well entwines with the A plot.
Kravos is wild. The book plot, kind of, right? That's kind of what's that's the B plot. That's like the book plot. And the other stuff, the A is like the...
And maybe that's what it is, right?
Like plot.
Kravos is the A plot, but then it goes secondary to the B plot at one point. And Bianca's in the Vampire War, that's the B plot until you get to the end of the book, and then it's the A plot, right? So it's like an hourglass, kind of, where it's just like you've got these two plots that blend together and switch places.
I feel like Kravos is supposed to be the A plot in the book plot, but it feels like the B plot. Like you said, right? It's less important,
sort of, kind of.
It gets overshadowed by the other story,
right?
When that is relevant, by a lot.
And then you've got all the Michael stuff, and you've got all, so there's
proto Michael, as I call this, my version of Michael, because he is not the same Michael as later.
In what way would you say that?
He's not the same thing as Thomas. He's just more fanatical, this Michael. He becomes, for sure. He's more paladin-y, more fanatical than later.
More fanatical than when all he's doing is quoting Latin scripture and prayers in the Vault of Hades. More fanatical than then. When he has the literal grace of an archangel.
Yes. He's way more. Also, we know him better, but he's not fully fleshed out there yet, I'm pretty sure. And then he becomes more human They're more of the Michael we know.
This is weird.
He gives Harry a bunch of crap about not marrying Susan for like the whole book. Like, I would say, you know, he's idealized maybe a bit, but
I don't know. Like, when
the next time you're
and the baby were in the hospital, he seems very, very human.
I'm not saying he's not human. I'm just saying he's more fun. You know, have it in the back of your mind the next time you read it. Maybe you'll see, like, spot it. Or maybe that's just me that thinks that. I don't know.
We'll get there eventually in 4 episodes.
Yep. All right. Well, yeah, I think I'm definitely going to go see if I can go through Full Moon a bit more and see if there's anything else that we want to include. But I think we also kind of covered it at a high level. So, you know, we might do Great Peril next
time. To do the breakdown of like which happens in which episode and that those transitions as it seemed like you wanted to.
Yeah.
Got to do some of that work.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yep.
But that will for sure be a new season, right? So this is one season that we first part, second part.
Great Peril's all on its own, in my opinion, because it's too big.
Yeah. It's two books.
I mean, it's going to take us 6 episodes to get through it. Just imagine how much it's going to take to put everything on screen, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
All right.
So. There could be arguments to be made that even the show should start there.
With Great Peril?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a purist. Start at book 1.
Yeah. I think especially because like we want to see why Bianca is so mad. Otherwise, we're going to have to do a flashback to tell that part of the story.
Have you seen any Reacher, Justin?
I haven't, no.
Okay, because apparently they're mixing up just taking the books they think is best, not going 1-2. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
Aren't those books much more standalone? I don't know, Cody can give us more information apparently, but it's like those books seem to be very episodic and standalone and not building on each other the way that Dresden is.
That's why I kind of say that we could go from book 3 because that's where it starts, really. All the building. All the others, like book 1 and 2 were very standalone-ish and then tied in. And in book 3, it's like a lot more of the stuff he planned. This is where it starts.
Right. Yeah. Worth highlighting and considering. So, but
I think that's part of the changes that we were making of like, say, if Morgan is still going to be a follow through season 1, including Full Moon, and having that ending with the White Council at the end of Full Moon instead of in Stormfront, I think that helps give more of a finale. Showdown with Uluguru is still really big and powerful, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've got the video that Susan took.
It's not Susan, is it? Yes, it is Susan. But it almost becomes, it's like a big bombastic finale. And then it can be like the cliffhanger is this, people now saw the video, everything's getting revealed, and then psych, it didn't get revealed at all.
If you can kind of end at this question of what's gonna happen because now that like there's the videotape out there, it's all over the news and what's going on.
I would hate that as a viewer, by the way, but I think it's great for getting
people. I was gonna say it'd be tricky because the payoff isn't until we still haven't even entirely seen the payoff, but we know what happened and everything. And so it's just like, but this one we do know isn't just dead on arrival, like Chauncey in a library. This one does have dividends paid forward, but it doesn't get referenced again until way later. Speaking along those lines, it's actually more referenced in the law, isn't it? You know, as much as anything. So what do we do about side jobs? What do we do about briefcases and all of that stuff? Are we going to take out little episodes as we go to tell these stories? So we're already 8 minutes over, so we'll save that for a future episode. This has been the Dresden Files podcast. Sign up to our Patreon. Get into our Discord. We'll send you gifts and heckle your bad ideas if you want and just generally hang out.
And next week, we're continuing going through Aronoth's Windlass chapter by chapter.